All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the morning. Bruce Feldman, 20 minutes from now, get us an update on Arizona State, Nebraska coaching searches, everything else happening in college football. Wednesday, September 21st, 9 a.m., right here on Jocks 94.5.
Stat hero, if you're not playing, you should be, because college football's daily fantasy, it's now so easy, so winnable, and so much fun. It's like nothing else out there. It's called Stat Hero. Don't waste your time betting on outrageous spreads. Stat Hero is the game of skill, focusing on the players. Pick the players that you think will perform the best, and you can win cold, hard cash. Don't forget to enter the promo code JOCKS when you enter stathero.com/jocks. You'll receive 100% deposit match, so download now. And you could play with me. I'm telling you, you're going to love this right now. They just brought it down from the NFL to college, and people have never won at a higher clip in daily fantasy like they're doing right now with Stat Hero. It's actually winnable. Every other fantasy site, it feels like it's impossible. Not at Stat Hero. Go to stathero.com/jocks and sign up to play with me and get 100% deposit match. Stathero.com.
All right, going to go to the Twitter feed quickly, at Mac and Cube. You can always tweet in, be a part of the show. Brought to you by our friends at Royal Buick GMC. Royal Payne tweets in, I think Lane would kill it at Arizona State, but don't think he would take it now because of conference uncertainty. He's in a pretty good spot, and I think he, if he is going to look at other jobs down the road, I think there will be better jobs in his future that he'll be able to take a look at. Our guy John Trill tweets in, I like Cole's monitor usage on the sideline, but he doesn't need a huge monitor because he has 20/20 vision thanks to Jennifer and Mark Michelson with Michelson Laser Vision. Hashtag gig'em.
There you go.
There we go.
I feel like effective advertising proof there.
That's it.
Just put the stamp on it. There you go. The Duke of 71 tweets in, the money has killed rivalries as we know it. New rivalries will spring from all of this team conference change. Think about how long that's going to take, though, to get to the point to where we are with some that are now going to be gone. And they're not all gone. We're keeping a lot. And there will be some that are cool, that are new, that come along. Clifford tweets in, it's a law in the books in South Carolina that we and Clemson have to play every season. Well, make a law then.
I'm with it.
I've heard that. I don't know if that's true. Like, I don't know if that's true. I've heard that before, too. People have said that about the South Carolina situation. I'm not sure that's true. I need to double check on that. So if that's in the state laws, what are you going to do? Give them a citation? Is it a misdemeanor?
Fine them.
It's a misdemeanor if you don't do it.
Yeah. Like what? You can cut their scholarships.
That's it. That'll get them. That'll teach them.
That'll teach them.
No more funding for
that'll teach them
projects. Dave tweets in. This is good. Tennessee versus Vandy is a closer rivalry than Oklahoma State. This isn't a loss for college football. It's a trash game every year.
Ooh.
Okay.
I'm not sure where to go with that one.
You're dumb.
Hamilton tweets in, the Big 12 used to be such a fun conference to watch growing up, had great rivalries. Really sucky that the only rivalries left are about to be SEC and Big 10 rivalries, plus Florida State versus Miami, even though they both suck.
Golly, what is wrong with everybody?
They just caught a stray.
Big 12.
They just caught a stray.
What is taking us down this path today?
You've been gone, Greg. The people are mad.
They're mad. They're big mad.
Golly, one bad game by Auburn. The whole thing. One bad game by Bama and one bad game by Auburn in consecutive weeks. It's like the whole world's falling apart.
And it is. It is. It's just crumbling right in front of us. Clifford tweets in, at Mac and Cube. Gamecocks had a critical third down play against Georgia the team had not practiced in 3 weeks. How many plays did you guys use in a game that were not practiced the week before? I'm going to say for me, very, very few. I do not recall ever a time being on the sideline saying, all right, guys, remember back when we were preparing for Arkansas and we ran this reverse pass. We're bringing it back. I know you hadn't seen it in a few weeks. Remember that? I really think it could be effective today, but I need you to go back and remember a couple of weeks ago when we utilized this and we were going to put it in. And this is not a real thing for me.
No.
And I don't know what the situation is behind the scenes there of how much that – I haven't seen the quotes from when that was said or who said that. But if that is, then that's putting your guys in a pretty tough spot, especially depending on what the play is.
Yeah, I'd be really surprised if there was something that they ran – in the game that wasn't practiced at least once that week. On Monday, you literally run everything. Monday's practice is like the worst practice ever because you're running a million different plays. All right, this works, this doesn't work. This does work, this doesn't work. Like, it's basically a weeding out process on Monday. That's what you do. And then Tuesday, you hone in the plan a little bit more. Wednesday's third down red zone. Thursday's two-minute drill, and you're off and running on Friday. So I would be highly surprised. Like, there were times, like in our goal line short yardage, we did six plays goal line short yardage every single week for practice, every single week. And we had those six plays, maybe three were up that one particular week. Like, we got counter, we got power, and we got power O, or we got fire pass, you know, whatever the situation is. Like, we have six plays, we're going to practice all six. Only three are up this week, but we're going to practice them anyway. So I can't envision a scenario where they hadn't, quote, run it for 3 weeks. First of all, what's 3 weeks ago? The training camp? Week zero? When they run? Like, what three? I mean, what are we talking
fall
about?
Fall camp, maybe week one. So, I mean, I don't know. It's the opposite way of that, I think you could say every week, like, how many plays did you practice that you didn't run? That happened a lot.
That's all the time.
There's a ton.
But it all gets carryover. Like, it all gets carried over to the next week. Like, if you hadn't shown it, perfect. We'll carry it over.
We had a year defensively where our guys would just lose their minds every week with all the pressures they practiced and then never ran any pressures in a game. Like, none. That was not Bill Oliver, but a different guy. And, the frustration will begin to show up if you go the other way with that a lot. Guys are just going to be mad. They're not going to like it. Kind of like when you have a plumbing issue. That makes everybody mad. Who do you need to call? Not Ghostbusters, but Benjamin Franklin, the punctual plumber. Why? They service residential and commercial projects. No job is going to be too big or too small, and a real person going to answer the phone 24 hours a day. All employees, drug tested, background checked, multiple master plumbers on staff. You've heard us talk about that office staff. They've been together over 15 years, and there are no extra fees for after hours, weekend, or holiday service calls. Think about that with what's coming up here in the next few months. All the holidays that we're going to have, all the different times you're going to have people over to the house, all the different times that you have got to have things operating correctly. If you have anything go wrong, Benjamin Franklin will be there after hours, on weekends, on holidays, and it will be no extra charge. Just a couple reasons, GMAC, for all your plumbing needs. It's got to be Benjamin Franklin, the punctual plumber.
Yeah, and I think the best thing is that regular preventative maintenance will help save you a lot of money and a lot of worries in the future. That's why they offer the Benjamin Franklin Club. It's a service agreement for just $8 a month. They'll come out and they'll perform a safety check on your entire home and maintenance on your water heater once annually. In addition to that, they're going to give you 15% off any repairs as well. So go call Lee, Chris, Jeff, Susan. They're going to take great care of you, just like they take great care of us. We are both members of the Benjamin Franklin Club, so give them a shout. 982-7775 or go online to the BenjaminFranklinPlumbing.com.
All right, I want to get to some of these other games with you nationally, GMAC, that took place over the weekend. We haven't really had a chance to discuss. There are a couple of teams I think we're still sort of waiting on that we still don't know about. Like, you brought up Michigan a little bit earlier.
They're the best example of a team where I have no idea what to make of them.
No. And now Cade McNamara is going to be out for a couple of weeks, so you're not going to have the conversations about the quarterbacks and juggling and exactly what's going to happen there and how that's going to go on. But, I mean, it's a team that has scored 50 points in each of their first three games for the first time in school history. Blake Corum, 5 rushing touchdowns over the weekend against UConn, 59-0. I'm sorry if I'm not going to go nuts about what you've done against Hawaii and UConn. I don't know about how great you are. It feels like it might be, offensively at least, a little bit better than last year. Defense, I still don't really know. Definitely don't know. We don't know a lot about any of it. But still, I don't know what to make of Michigan. Where are you on what Jim Harbaugh's group has been able to pull off so far this season?
They've, like you said, using your word, they've handled their business. I mean, that's how you... I feel like describe games like this, but can you honestly learn anything about games against UConn and Colorado State and Hawaii? Like, the answer is no. I mean, you can't learn anything about those games. So now they're going to play 9 straight in the league. So we're going to have all we need about Michigan moving forward. And I think this week might be a decent test. I think Maryland's done a pretty good job this year. Maryland's fairly balanced offensively. Talia isn't having to throw it quite as much. Hemby has taken a lot of the load. He's averaging nearly 10 yards a carry. And you have a couple of really quality pieces at wide receiver for Maryland as well. So, look, Michigan's better than Maryland. Michigan's more disciplined than Maryland. Maryland had 15 penalties last week. That actually drops their season average, probably. I say that tongue-in-cheek in all seriousness. So this is not a game that Maryland would traditionally win because Michigan is just going to outsmart them, out-execute them, and just be more methodical than them in a setting like this. So I think Michigan handles their business this weekend, but this really is the first indicator of, hey, how close are they to where they were last year? And we might be able to get a good feel for it after this week's game.
Only Houston and Charlotte have more penalties on the year than Maryland does. And Charlotte's played four games. So that's
to say, Charlotte's a week zero.
Yeah. All right. Another team that I think we're just sitting back and sort of waiting on, not 100% sure. Yeah, a win against Nebraska normally would be nice. This Nebraska team, not so much. 49-14, Oklahoma takes out Nebraska. Dillian Gabriel, two touchdown passes in his last 13 games. He is throwing darts. The offensive line is playing well. They've got skill. I'm not sure the defense is too much different. Some folks want to tell you that it is. It doesn't appear to be night and day to me. But the takeaway I think that you've got is a quarterback that's playing at a high level with a lot of weapons and an offensive line that's playing maybe a little bit ahead of schedule and where we thought they were going to be. So, once again, the schedule, GMAC, I don't know what to make of Oklahoma. I kind of have this collection of teams right after Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State that I feel like, all right, we're just waiting on. And Oklahoma's one of those teams that I need to see them against better clubs before I have an idea of exactly where they're going to be this year.
Yeah. What I would say is I was kind of in the camp with you prior to last week. I know you're going to say, well, Nebraska, you know, is not very good. And I would agree with that. Definitely got things wrong with Nebraska this year. No denying that. But when I look at how they controlled both sides of the line of scrimmage, when I look at how they handled some of the things offensively by using misdirection and stuff like that, man, I thought that was a thing of beauty on Saturday. I mean, just a thing of beauty. It was workmanlike. They weathered an early storm. It wasn't too bad. But my goodness. And like I said, maybe the performance against Nebraska is not a clear indicator of progress. But my goodness, I'm not sure it could have been any cleaner. You know what I mean? So I'm very optimistic about what I saw from Oklahoma. And going into last week, I was kind of in the same boat as Michigan. It's like, I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make of Oklahoma just yet. But after last week, I feel much, much better about their prognosis and where they're heading.
Yeah, Clemson handles La Tech. I would place them in that category. 48-20, 36-game home win streak. Florida State has the ACC record of 37. But, you know, Will Shipley looks pretty good. Obviously, that defensive line is going to dominate teams like Louisiana Tech. You talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. They're going to get Wake this weekend. It's 11 o'clock on ABC. At least defensively, this will be a much better test. And this is a football team that I think will be the best that Clemson has played so far this season. I'm still in wait-and-see mode as far as having them be maybe a college football playoff contender, if we're just talking about what we've seen this year. Don't know if your thoughts are any different on Dabo's group and what you've seen.
I think they could get there. I'm not 100% sure, though, man. Like, I think they match up really well against Wake. I will acknowledge that. But NC State, I don't love the matchup for Clemson at all. I mean, the defense is great, but NC State's offense has not been as advertised just yet, hasn't played great just yet. But my goodness, man, I don't love at all what I'm seeing from NC State. I can tell you another one. I think Florida State could give Clemson some fits. Florida State playing really good football right now. I don't think... You know, at Notre Dame, that game might be a race to seven. First one to score seven wins. You know, and then the Miami game there at the end. Like, I think they can get there, but they're going to have to play well to get there. I mean, they really are. And I think some of the toughest tests are actually away from home, meaning at Wake this weekend, at Florida State, and at Notre Dame. So if I had to pick right now, does Clemson make the playoffs? I say no. But I can certainly see things clarifying a little bit. I just want to see how they perform this weekend.
It was actually a pretty decent day for the Pac-12. USC handled Fresno 45-17. I was on the wrong end of that one. Told you to take Fresno on the points. Washington, a really nice win against Michigan State. Michael Penix Jr. has a big day, 39-28. Oregon handles BYU. I was on the wrong end of that one as well, 41-20. Utah got San Diego State. Arizona held off North Dakota State, which for them, that's actually a pretty good win. Oregon State, Washington State both win. So it was a solid day for the Pac-12. I mean, Penix was 397 and four touchdowns. Just really impressive. 503 yeah. total yards. And you talked about Coach DeBoer just drawing up plays. They had a couple in that game that were just really slick, really nice, just different things that they're utilizing.
I like Washington, dude. I like that team a lot. I mean, I know that there's going to be big overreactions, and I hate how we do this. It's like everyone wants to make this out to be, oh, well, is this the end of the Big Ten? Like, no, it's not that at all. It's just look at the circumstances, man. Like, it's a tough – first of all, it's a tough game to begin with. Secondly, dude, you're not going to have your best stuff when you go on the road three time zones. I don't care what you are. They have not won a game Michigan State has since 1957 on the West Coast. But the way that Washington won it, now they took their foot off the gas and learned from that because they kind of got a little bit, I don't want to say they got cute, but they got a little, you know, conservative and, you know, didn't really put the nail in the coffin the way they should in the second half. But, man, I was very impressed. I don't know where you're at on this. I was very impressed with what I saw from Washington.
No, absolutely. I think the offensive line is pretty physical, too. They're getting after it. Right tackle Roger Rosengarten, a freshman, 6'6", 300. He's playing pretty good ball. So
Rowan Gardner?
Rosengarten.
Not Henry Rowan Gardner.
Correct. Roger Rosengarten. He's playing pretty good ball from Colorado, and he's been fun to watch this year. That group's playing better than I thought they would. So yeah, I'm with you. Which brings me to one game.
Next week's a good game, by the way. Washington at UCLA on Friday night. Woo boy!
Ooh, Friday night.
Oh yeah.
Over under 5,000 people in the bowl.
Under. But I'll be watching.
I hope not. I hope not. I hope that a Pac-12 opponent can actually raise the stakes a little bit there and actually get some folks in the stands. It's been gross watching that. Finally, before we get to Bruce Feldman, Tulane's 3-0. They knock off Kansas State 17-10 over the weekend. First win versus a Power 5 team for Tulane since 2006. Kansas State goes down.
Squad.
Tulane.
Dead.
Playoff chances. Playoff chances are... They're just up in smoke now.
Diminishing.
Done.
No, they're good. You can lose that one. It's like when you drop one right before March Madness. Like, you don't want to win your conference tournament. No one wants to win that. You want to lose one, have a good teachable moment for your team March Madness, and then you go on a run.
That's what all coaches say. Yep. That's what all coaches say in the tournament. And then every single one
intensity.
Of them. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We needed this.
We needed that.
Wow. Okay. We will see.
That was a bona fide look ahead, by the way. Like, Tulane, first of all, is pretty good. So let's not give...
No, Willie does a really nice job.
They do a good job. So it's like, let's give some credit where credit's due. 3-0. But either way, yeah, they're good. They're a solid football team. They're very, very solid. But that was all day look ahead. Who does Kansas State play this week?
Well, they're at that Oklahoma, 7 o'clock on Fox.
Oklahoma. So, you know, that was all look ahead. Watch, they'll play well this week. And I don't know if they'll win. I mean, that's a tough place to go play, and Oklahoma will be rocking after that performance last weekend, but I bet you they'll play a whole lot better this week than they did last week. It's just human nature. It's crazy how it works, too.
Absolutely. All right, going to get to a break. When we come back, Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports and The Athletic going to join us to talk college football coaching vacancies and more next right here on McElroy and Kubelik in the Morning. Welcome back in. McElroy and Kubelik in the Morning. It is 9:24 a.m. Wednesday, September 21st, right here on Jocks 94.5.
It's a great day right now to give our friends at Wayne's a shout. Wayne's takes unbelievable care of me and my family, and I know they'll take great care of you as well. Doesn't matter what you necessarily need. They take care of everything for me. It's mosquitoes, Virulon, you name it, Smart Pest. They take care of it all. The Environ right now is something I would highly recommend. And I would get out in front of it too, because if the weather starts to cool and the lawn becomes dormant, Now is a critical time to get the correct nutrients and pre-emergent in the turf and the root system, and properly treating your lawn now in the fall will make the lawn beautiful next spring. So go give them a shout. You're going to get 1 month free when you use offer code JOCKS. It's 866-WAYNES-1 or visit callwaynes.com and let Waynes create your happy place.
All right, let's go to the Bud Light Hotline now. Welcome in Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports. Also find his work at The Athletic. Bruce, always great to catch up with you. Interested in first just kind of discussing this Arizona State job, one that I think on the front end of this, we thought Herm Edwards was going to be able to get it right. It looked like it was heading in the right direction and then did not. What do you believe the interest nationally, the level of interest is going to be as far as the next head coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils is concerned?
You know, guys, a lot of people have always looked at this job as one that has a lot of potential. You're in a pretty big market. You have pretty good facilities. I don't want to say great facilities, but you know, you're close to Los Angeles. You're not that far from Texas. And again, there's a bunch of players who come out of Arizona as well. So there's a lot of people like, how come people haven't won there? You know, Todd Graham did okay, you know, at times, but it was like it never really was able to have much sustained success. Even Dennis Erickson, who obviously won national titles at Miami, it just, I think people look at it and go, okay, what is this job right now? Because you do have some instability in terms of are they going to end up in the Big 12? Or are they going to stay in a diminished Pac-12? What does that mean? And then on top of it, you have the NCAA investigation that is hanging over this program, you know, and I think people will look at it and go, you know, there's not a lot of great, you know, potentially great vacancies. It's not going to be like last year where you had a bunch of big jobs come open. You know, we think Auburn will come open and certainly Nebraska's there, but I don't know how many other big jobs will come open. So I think you'll see a lot of people put their hat in the ring to at least take a closer look at it.
I just have never quite figured out why that place can't seem to get out of its own way. Like you said, I mean, they've had really great moments, but they seldom are able to string it together. Is it just a lack of organizational control? Is it bad leadership from an AD standpoint? Like, I think a lot of people have called for Ray Anderson's job to also be gone. He's the AD there. He was an agent and hired his buddy Herm, and Herm obviously failed miserably. So it's hard for me to understand, like, what is the problem with Arizona State?
I think you hit on a big reason there. It's been poor leadership above, right? The whole idea of how the Herm hire played out, and you did a good job surmising why a lot of people are like, yeah, this probably isn't going to work great. And eventually it imploded with this, you know, big scandal that had happened there. And I think it just comes back to, if you don't have good leadership at the top, and again, now that's going to be a question mark, is Ray Anderson going to be the boss a year from now? You know, so it's like, I think coaches who are going to have, maybe either are sitting head coaches who have pretty good jobs, like, you know, maybe I won't jump at that one. You know, I think it's hard because one of the things, you guys obviously talk to a lot of football coaches as well, one of the things when things kind of go bad, or, you know, the thing you hear the most is, man, I probably wouldn't have taken this job if I knew, you know, what the situation above me or what my boss's, you know, status was. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, a head coach will be getting into. I don't want to say they'd have to be desperate to take this job, because there's still some real positives to it, at least potentially. But I do think it's one of those, let the buyer beware on this one.
Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports and The Athletic joining us right now on the Bud Light Hotline. Want to go to that Nebraska job as well. And it feels like, based on what I've read from you recently, that you feel like that search is narrowing. How close do you think Nebraska is, and how many candidates would be on that short list as it pertains to who is the next head coach of the Cornhuskers?
Well, I think Trev Alberts in Nebraska, you know, they have kind of a top of their order. I think it's still going to get sorted out, you know, over time, because we don't know, you know, a lot can play out. You know, the three guys I've heard who are the leaders or the front runners in their mind, this being Nebraska, Matt Campbell, who's done a terrific job at Iowa State. He has developed a real good culture at a place that really had never had any sustained success. And he's proven he's really good at developing talent, and that's key, especially in that area, in that job. Now, one thing I did hear was Nebraska wants to really be very aggressive in how they utilize NIL. And Iowa State, to this point under Matt Campbell, really hasn't chosen to do that. I don't know if they feel like that doesn't kind of jive with their development model and their program. But I think it's no given that he would leave Iowa State for that job. Then there's Lance Leipold, who's a former Nebraska assistant under Frank Solich, won 6 national titles at D3, did a really good job at Buffalo and the MAC, and now is kind of working miracles at Kansas. I mean, they were so bad at the end, for so long, and now they're 3-0, won back-to-back road games for the first time in 15 years. I mean, this guy, he's really good. And he might be a really good fit there. And then the third one is Bill O'Brien, who's at Alabama, obviously. Trev Alberts has admired him for a long time, even dating back to the relationship, I think, starting when they were both in Atlanta when O'Brien was at Georgia Tech. And he has a lot of respect for what O'Brien did, taking over a horrific situation at Penn State in the wake of the Jerry Sandusky scandal. And he had 2 really strong years before he left to the NFL. And I think in Trev Alberts' eyes, you're seeing a guy who's proven he's not afraid to take over a massive rebuild or an overhaul, which I think Alberts knows from now being around Lincoln and the end of the Scott Frost run. He knows that place needs major work to be fixed.
Yeah, I just have a hard time understanding with Nebraska right now. And I had to remind everybody, hey, Scott Frost turned down Florida in favor of Nebraska. Like, so still, granted, that was Scott Frost. Maybe not everybody views it that way. But he turned down Florida before jumping to Nebraska. So it's still viewed in very, very high regard amongst some. But is it viewed in very high regard amongst all because of the lack of proximity to players? It would be a huge turnoff for me. But the brand, the tradition, the league, the NIL opportunities, there's still an awful lot there. So how do coaches view Nebraska right now?
I think it's exactly what you said. I think in the case of Lance Leipold, he had been there. He's from the Midwest. I think he's also in his late 50s or in his upper 50s. I think it'd be hard for him to say no if Nebraska came after him. His buyout drops to $5 million into December. I think there's a point where he would, I think it'd be really hard for him to say no to Nebraska. I don't know if it would be that hard for Matt Campbell to say no. And then in the case of Bill O'Brien, I think the question is, what else is intriguing that's on the horizon for him, right? Because you got to remember, unlike maybe some of the other coaches who are going to be in these searches, like, he's going to be the offensive coordinator of a team that will feel pretty confident will be in the playoff at that point. What else comes open? Like I said, we think Auburn's going to come open. We think Georgia Tech is going to come open. I don't know. Obviously, he knows Georgia Tech very well. He probably knows it way better than he knows Nebraska. Is that a job that is interesting to him? I mean, both of these jobs are big rebuilds, and I think it's like it is kind of relevant to what you follow, because just we were in Nebraska last week and talked to people around the program, and I asked, why did it not work for Scott Frost? I mean, I was flat wrong. I thought that was going to be a great hire, a home run hire, and it was a complete dud. And one of the things you heard was, well, he followed up after George O'Leary, and George O'Leary, as it was, just a hard bleep, and was on people. And then Frost came in and, the players responded to that, to the kind of change. Whereas he got over at Nebraska, where it was a mess already. And it was, somebody put it to me, it was like, it was a grease fire that they never put out. And that lack of discipline, lack of accountability, lack of organization ended up, completely backfiring in that wake. So I think it's going to be again, Georgia Tech feels like it's been beaten down so much worse because they're losing blowout games, whereas Nebraska, till last weekend, had been losing really close games, but a lot of them. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be as attractive to people as it was, back when you guys were playing. It wasn't like, we're not even talking about the Osborne days, but we're talking about, like, Bo Pelini, at least, was putting up 9-win seasons. That's not them anymore.
All right, Bruce, I'm interested going a little bit further with the Nebraska situation, because when I'm asked about it, the first thing that comes to mind for me is I don't know exactly what they need. And I'm not asking you for an individual name, but what do you think should be at the top of the priority
list? I'm just curious
your
thoughts on this. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm just curious, Bruce. Like, what are your...
I'm sorry about that, Bruce. I'm interested in just what kind of a coach. Is it a recruiter? Is it somebody who can develop talent? Is it an organizer? Is it like what do you think should be at the forefront of exactly what Nebraska needs as their next head football coach?
Well, I feel like I'd be cheating and saying all of it, because the roster is not good. The organization was horrible there in the last few years. And that, I think it's all kind of the organization and ties to me ties into the development. You know, I don't feel like they developed much there, right? And they were really, because they didn't recruit that well, the margin for error was so thin. They didn't have any playmakers. So the best playmaker they probably had in the last couple of years, he ended up transferring home to play for Mark Stoops, you know, and I think that if you don't recruit better, and when Scott Frost got there, he talked about Wisconsin, and, you know, like, we're not going to be doing what we can't compete with Ohio State. We're not going to put up, like, you know, Ohio State up in maybe a top three class loaded with five stars. He was being realistic. I do think, you know, NIL is something of a game changer potentially, because we've seen, you know, Louisville be very aggressive this year, and Louisville seems to have a good class in the pipeline. I think you can't have it without that, right? Are you going to try to do what Dave Clawson is doing at Wake Forest, where you're maybe not recruiting the highly ranked guys, but you have a really smart system that fits and you're developing players to it? I mean, I think you have to major in something. And it's, to me, the biggest thing is you got to find a way to develop players there. Iowa, Wisconsin, we've seen that work. If you're not organized, you're not on top of it, you know, you just can't. I don't know. I just don't think it's gonna work if you're just thinking, hey, we're gonna out recruit Michigan and Ohio State and then everybody else, in the SEC for talent if there's a big enough player in the area, because there's not enough players for them around. So I just think it's really got to come back to development.
Bruce, what was Scott Frost's reception among people around Nebraska? Because I got to be honest, my run-ins with him have not always been real pleasant. He's kind of I don't want to say he's a jerk, but he kind of was in some ways. So I was always curious, like, did that have an effect on his ability or inability to maybe attract some players in? I don't know. For whatever reason, he always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't know if you had similar interactions with him.
No, I mean, you know, there were times where, you know, I think the perception was he could be aloof a little bit. But you got to remember there, he was the quarterback of a great team. He's from Wood River in the state. And then the biggest thing, I think, was, and I feel like, Cole, you might have done a couple of these games when they were at the end of their run, where, you know, they were on top of the college football world, about as close to being on top of the college football world as you can get for a group of five program at UCF. And when he took over, they were a winless team. So, you know, you guys said it, he turned down, quote, maybe more attractive jobs to come home. So I think they were just elated that this guy was here. Now, once they got back, it was a complete, you know, implosion. I mean, just the lack of organization, I think the lack of detail. And so many of those things were like, who did he play for? Tom Osborne. Those are like hallmarks of what he built. He sustained an all-time great program. And those are the things where it seems like Scott was like most asleep at the wheel. So I think that, you know, maybe your feel for him probably can certainly tie into that, where you're like, maybe he had a lot of other stuff going on. And after a while, the main thing just ceases to become the main thing. And that's where you get in trouble as a football coach.
Bruce, great stuff as always. We really appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. That's Bruce Feldman of Fox Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Bruce Feldman CFB. Find his work at The Athletic. And he joined us on the Bud Light Hotline, carefully brewed with a clean, crisp taste when there's fun, Bud Light is there. Kind of follow up on a little bit of what Bruce had to say there as far as what potentially could be next for Nebraska. We'll do that next right here on McElroy and Kublik in the morning. All right, welcome back in. McElroy and Kublik in the morning, 9:40, 6 a.m. Wednesday, September 21st, right here on Jocks FM. 94.5. Andy Burcham with us earlier today talking Auburn-Penn State, Auburn-Missouri. Bruce Feldman joined us just a few moments ago talking college football coaching changes. Get all those at the podcast at jocksfm.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get yours. Please like, rate, review, subscribe to those. As always, you know, if you want to be able to do what I've done and be able to see things that I see during the fall, you need to call Michelson Laser Vision. As our man John Trill pointed out earlier on Twitter, yes, I can see the screen well because of my visit to Michelson Laser Vision over 20 years ago. I called 205-969-8100, set up a free consultation, talked to Dr. Mark Michelson, found out that he was the first surgeon in the state of Alabama to perform the LASIK procedure. And for 30 years now, Dr. Mark Michelson has been on the forefront of corrective laser surgery in the United States. Thanks to Michelson Laser Vision, I feel like my vision is still perfect over 20 years after having the LASIK procedure. I was legally blind when I went in to see Dr. Mark Michelson. There are a variety of easy and affordable payment plans. And now Jennifer Michelson has joined his practice right there at UAB Highlands. They're offering comfortable and convenient care for you. The members of our community, they're rooted right here in Birmingham and have dedicated their practice to serving the people of Alabama. So do what I did. Call 205-969-8100. Set up that free consultation today with Michelson Laser Vision or visit MichelsonLaserVision.com for more information. Just kind of want to follow up what Bruce Feldman was saying quickly about this Nebraska job, GMAC, and kind of what I asked him, interested to get your thoughts in it. I don't know exactly what kind of coach would have the best chance to go there and win. I don't know if it's understanding the geography, understanding the landscape, if it's a developer. I don't know exactly what Nebraska needs because I'm not sure what kind of Nebraska program is going to have to be moving forward to ultimately be successful. I don't think you can be just a developmental program anymore. And based on where they're located, I would have to imagine you're going to have to take a little bit of a Lane Kiffin approach as far as how you utilize the portal. So what kind of coach do you think would be the best fit for that job?
I like the development coach. I agree with that. I don't think you can be the bells and whistles recruiter, man. It's just not going to be what's going to work there. You look at what's happened and the programs that have had decent success in recent years. Look, you're not going to be a team that wins 10 every year. It's just not going to be that way right now. If you're a developmental program, it's really tough to be a 10-win team on an annual basis. It's just not going to happen. There's going to be years when you fall flat. But Iowa State's had success. Iowa's had success. In a perfect world, you could become Wisconsin. Problem is Wisconsin has already kind of carved out a niche for themselves where they're going to have unbelievable, great front seven defensive play. And they're going to have good run game with a great offensive line. Like, they've already created that niche for themselves. Like, no one knows what is Nebraska's identity. Can anyone tell me Nebraska's identity?
They sell out games.
That's great. I don't have anything else, though. I mean, seriously, if you, after 5 years of Scott Frost, you can't tell me what your offensive and defensive identity is, that's a problem. Because now if you're trying to recruit kids, like, hey, man, what am I going to be a part of? Like, describe your program in one line.
Losing close games.
Ah, that's a fact.
But, I mean, seriously, like, I think you got to have an identity, man. You have a coach that has a clear-cut identity that's going to do things a very specific way so that when I turn on Nebraska, I know what I'm going to get, just like it was in the 90s. I'm not saying you need to go back to the Veer and start, you know, going dive option. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying it'd be helpful if... You know, you kind of knew what to expect when you put Nebraska on every week, and that's not what you're getting right now, and you haven't for a while.
It's just, it's so odd because you think about when things were as good as they were ever been at Nebraska. You can't go back to that right now. I mean, you could, but ultimately it's just not going to be very successful, especially with the way other teams in your conference are recruiting and what it looks like they're going to be able to do. And then like you said, what do you have that you can sort of stamp your name on right now? There just doesn't feel like there's a lot. And then the geography in which you're recruiting, the landscape in which you're recruiting, you can't go get 100 walk-ons every year anymore. It's not going to happen. Number one, there are just too many other schools offering scholarships as opposed to what they were in 1988. So it's just it's not going to be able to operate in the same way. And I'm just interested to see sort of who this hire is and what direction that person feels they need to go to try to make this program successful again. If you were to ask me, I think it's got to be a coach that's had some history developing players, because I do think you're going to have to take some lower tier recruits, you know, some 3-star guys, and try to get them in there and just make football players out of them. Try to find out how they fit your scheme, fit your system, and go out and win football games. But I think it's also got to be a guy that has some familiarity with the portal, has used it, knows how to use it, knows how to go get talent from it, because that's got to be an area that Nebraska has success with moving forward if they're going to find a way to win games. You can't draw that 50-mile radius around your campus like Snellenberger did at Miami, or like you can at an LSU or one of the Florida schools, and be able to just recruit. It's just it's not going to go that way. You're not going to be able to drive 2 and 4 hours each direction and be able to fill 70-80% of your roster. Hell, I don't think you could fill 40% of your roster, to be honest. So there's got to be different ways. And I don't know exactly. I felt like Nebraska was in a good spot from an NIL perspective, GMAC, but I don't really know exactly how that works. I feel like they should be okay there, but there just feels like there's a lot that needs to be figured out. One thing we know, the support's going to be there. The fan support will be there, and you'll have good environments to play in, but everything else just feels like it's a long way off right now for this Nebraska program.
Yeah, it does. And honestly, I don't think – here's the thing, is in the world of transfer portal, you can get good overnight. Like, SC is a good example of that, man. Look, I'm not sure Lincoln Riley's walking through the door at Nebraska. Let's just be real. But I don't think anyone would have ever said in today's day and age, Kansas is going to start 3-0 and win back-to-back games on the road against two talented football teams. So, and by the way, they're going to beat Duke this week. So it makes them 3-0, 4-0. They might get to 5-0 if you look at what they have the week after that. I don't even know who they have the week after that. But anyway, like, anything's possible now with the portal. Anything. So if you can figure out the best combination of development, homegrown talent, and portal, you can find a way to be successful and be successful quickly. So I'd like to do it at a place like Nebraska, though, because you're going to have all the bells and whistles. I think it's a better job than people realize. I think it's a hard job because you're going to be held to the unrealistic standards of the modern day. You're going to be held to the standards of the 1990s. That's not fair, because the program is not in a similar spot. They fired Bo Pelini after he won 9 games a year for like 6 straight years. I mean, look at what happened. Look at what happens to the program ever since. So I think it's a place you can win, and you're going to get all the support that you could possibly need to be able to win. I think they really have to, they absolutely have to get this hire right. Have to.
I don't think there's any doubt. And I don't want to point to specific schools right now, but because it is a topic that's making a lot of noise and that a lot of people seem to be kind of running with, what are your thoughts of Deion Sanders taking one of these Power 5 jobs and how he potentially would be able to manage that, and how successfully do you potentially think he could be with that?
You know, I think the big thing about Deion is everyone's going to talk about his recruitment, right? But I don't know anything about his development. Like, I mean, I understand his ability to relate to players, and I can understand very much how that would have a huge impact on the recruiting trail. And he's done a great job of making the HBCU level of football, making it more attractive as a destination. I think his recruiting prowess would be even further cemented at a place with legitimate history. But ultimately, man, recruiting's half the battle. What you do with the guys when you get there, that's the other half. And he also has his son that's playing quarterback for him that was a, you know, 5-star, 4-star recruit. So you take your son out of the equation, and, you know, then is he winning? I don't know. Like, I think it's a real risk. I like Deion a lot and think he kind of resembles what could become of the modern era. You know, former players that are getting into it and finding great relationships with the players. But I don't think it's a bona fide slam dunk that he takes over one of these Power 5 jobs and starts ripping off national championships one after another.
There's absolutely a risk that would come with it. But from a marketing perspective, which obviously now with NIL, you think about just kind of raising the awareness and the visibility of a program, there would be a lot of value in that also. But you've got to find a way to go out and coordinate offenses and defenses, organize a team to be able to win games, which he has done. right, we'll be back tomorrow, 7 to 10. Three-man front is next.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.